A peaceful protest turns violent and leads to 6 arrests at Heming Park. But did the JSO overreact? As the debate rages over the Heming Park 5, as they're being called, we'll take a closer look. Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream the audio and video of this program right now live on our First Coast Connect Facebook page to follow the discussion. Just ahead, we're going to take your calls on the controversial arrest of protesters from Friday's anti-war demonstration in Heming Park. What do you think about this? Give us a call now at 549-2937. Then later, honoring our fallen heroes from the Vietnam War, we'll tell you why the wall that heals is coming to downtown Jacksonville. Then later, it's Parkinson's Awareness Month and sports with Culpepper, all of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, anti-war demonstrators are accusing the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office of excessive force after a protest Friday in Heming Park against military strikes in Syria turned violent. JSO arrested 5 people during the protest, and they got physical with 2 of them, injuring a deaf man and an elderly veteran. In addition to calls for an independent investigation, the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition says the police should arrest counter-protester Gary Snow. The group alleges he provoked that unrest. Snow denies that. More on his take in a moment. And the JSO has released a statement on the whole incident saying their officers acted properly and that they were obligated to make the arrests as they tried to break up fighting in the park. Now, video of this melee has been widely shared on social media as the story is covered locally, nationally, and even overseas. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look at just what went down Friday night in Heming Park. Here in studio, we welcome 2 of the protesters, Wells Todd and Karen Morian of the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Attorney John Phillips is here in studio. He will be representing some of the demonstrators who were arrested.
Good morning.
Counter-protester Gary Snow spoke to our partner News for Jax. We'll hear his interview, and we'll also let you know what JSO has to say about all this as we read their statement. And the lines are already jammed as we discuss this incident from Friday in Heming Park. We'll get to your calls as soon as we can at 549-2937. If you can't get through on the phones, email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Weigh in on our Facebook page where this show is streaming live. We'll get to as many of you as we can. Very hot topic. But let's begin with Wells Todd of the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition. After the demonstration Friday in the park, there was a similar demonstration on Saturday as the people who were arrested went through the process. You are calling for charges to be dropped against them and for the counter-protester to be arrested. Let's listen really quickly to what he had to say, and then Wells Todd, we'll go to you. Counter-protester Gary Snow told our news partner, News for Jax, that he was not the one who provoked this protest. Here's what he had to say.
The actual initial engagement was them stealing my megaphone from me because they didn't want to hear my voice. They didn't want to hear what I had to say. So they took my property. They stole my property. I broke my foot because as soon as I got there, they stole my property.
Okay. Gary Snow denies that he provoked this and that the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition were the ones that behaved improperly. There's lots of video being shared of this melee, and people are interpreting it basically through their own political prism. Where does the Progressive Coalition stand on this whole incident? Wells Todd.
Well, first I want to respond to what the your listeners just heard. News Jax did this interview with this person named Gary Snow. We really don't know his real name. Without investigating this guy, they did no background investigation on him. So he's looking like the victim. Gary Snow is here from Chicago. He is a provocateur. He did the same thing in Chicago that he's doing here, and that is to incite violence. He goes around to different groups, and everybody who's listening now that is out there protesting what is happening in the world and here in the United States have had contact with this guy. And I need to point this out because JSO knows him. They know him. They know where he's from, and they did nothing to stop what happened. I need to say this because people need to know that at one demonstration, Gary Snow showed up in his truck with out-of-state tags, and the tags, his license plates, were expired. This was noted, told to the police, and the police stood there and said there was nothing they could do. And this was the same attitude that happened Friday. There is a certain protocol for demonstrations, and that is to keep both sides separate from one another. Gary Snow rushed the stage. He put his hands on people. He hit people with his Trump flagpole. He used his megaphone when the police had said you can't use megaphones until 7 o'clock. He was the first one to speak. And people need to understand that he was not arrested. And after,
okay, and let's go to an eyewitness, Karen Morian. You were there. I've looked at the video of the whole controversial dust up, and it's been fascinating to see on social media people interpreting what they see in the video differently. What did you see?
Well, I have to say I've seen some of the videos as well, and I've seen things in the videos that I didn't see, and so it's really hard to go from one witness to say this is the everything. I think what needs to happen is all the videos need to be reviewed and eyewitnesses need to be interviewed, not just myself. So I think until that happens, we really won't get a complete picture of what's happened. I did not see the initial kickoff incident. I did see the two subsequent arrests, but I only saw two out of the five.
And is it your view that the sheriff's office acted improperly? They've released a statement about this whole matter, and they said that the officers had a responsibility to protect the rights of all people involved in the protest as well as the public. They've accused the anti-war protesters of inciting a riot.
Well, I can tell you that Jacksonville Progressive Coalition has been holding peaceful demonstrations since its inception 5 years ago. There are other groups in Jacksonville who have been demonstrating at various locations around the city who can also testify to Gary's involvement. And people have repeatedly asked for counter demonstrators to be separated from us. And there's only been one incident that I know of where JSO did to undertake actions to do that. And so people have felt threatened by him for quite a while now. I can tell you that people were begging, and myself included, JSO, to please inform their colleagues that Connell Crooms was deaf and could not hear their instructions and so could not comply. He was trying to sign that he was deaf, and that was taken as resisting arrest. And the officer clearly heard me and refused to tell his officers that he was deaf and okay, could not hear them. And I really have a problem with that as an ADA issue.
John Phillips, local attorney, you're representing some of the so-called Hemming Park Five, the people that were arrested. And as the process works its way through, are you going to call for the charges to be dropped?
We're you know, this it's very early. And so there's two sides to this. There's the criminal defense side, and then there's the kind of civil rights, civil justice side. And from the purposes, and it's where I have a problem with JSO releasing a statement after a Friday night event before reviewing evidence. We have videos coming into us day in, day out, and ask for more videos to be sent to us, because you need to take a step back and review things from 30 to 60 feet out to really say what was reasonable, instead of, you know, kind of whitewashing an opinion on this. But we're looking at charges, we're meeting with people, and we're actually doing a proper investigation before we have an opinion.
All right. Let's go to your calls right now as we discuss the group being called the Hemming Park Five, anti-war demonstrators who were arrested Friday after a protest in Hemming Park against military strikes in Syria became violent. We are streaming video and audio of this show right now, live on our WJCT Facebook page. You can follow on video there. You can email the show, tweet the show, or give us a call. Lots of callers. Let's begin with Tony in Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Tony.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I actually support military action in Syria, but I have a great respect for the coalition going out there and having their voices heard. But the main issue that I find with this is it becomes increasingly apparent that JSO and other law enforcement around the country are ill-equipped to handle protesters. This is a period of history in the United States where there are a lot of protests and a lot of activists that are getting out and trying to make their voices heard. And it doesn't look like police organizations across the country are really equipped well enough to understand this is how to properly separate these people, because the pro-war protesters that came in, especially Mr. Snow, really incited, you know, what were already hot and heated emotions to escalate this conflict to where I believe justice was improperly served by the JSO.
Thanks, Tony. You know, Sheriff Mike Williams in the past, actually on this program, Wells Todd, has talked about how police agencies around the country are trying to increasingly focus on de-escalation techniques so that something like this doesn't get out of hand.
Right. But we're holding Sheriff Williams and the police department here responsible for what happened. And we're asking for a public apology, and we're asking the city to pay for damages.
Are you filing a lawsuit?
That is something that we're looking into. And we also are calling for...
Who will be named in the lawsuit?
I guess the city.
The JSO?
Yes. We're also calling for a formal investigation of the white supremacists that are in the JSO, and a formal cultural change in their program for responding to citizens' rights.
Lots of calls, emails, tweets, comments on our Facebook page about Friday's unrest in Heming Park. Here are just a few of the tweets from all of you. When arresting people for inciting a riot, shouldn't the person responsible for inciting the riot be arrested? JSO should arrest both sides if they're breaking up a fight, and law enforcement should de-escalate. Catalina tweets the show, talk about how JSO officers ignored several people telling them Connell Crooms was deaf and trying to sign. There is so much interest in this on our Facebook page. Go to the WJCT Facebook Live right now to watch the video of this discussion, as we're getting lots of comments from you. Kira writes, is it true that provocateur Gary Snow, also known as Garrett Nix, has been fleecing the families of slain police officers? I have no idea if that's true, but it appears that Gary Snow is on the line. He's called into the show. We were able to get his interview from our partner News for Jax, but now we have him live. Gary Snow, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling the show. So what's your response then to critics of your presence at this demonstration? They say you acted as a provocateur and tried to spark violence. What's your response to that?
I find it kind of odd that the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition, they would like to portray themselves as, you know, they have the right to go out into a public place and hold a protest. But if somebody comes out and expresses their freedom of speech and uses their right to, voice their opinion or their dissent for their protest, then, you know, I was looked upon as, you know, an agitator or a provocateur. It seems like a double standard. They have the right to protest, but I don't. And when I first got out there that day, I was very respectful to everybody. I shook my hand and introduced myself, and things just slowly started to get worse. They, you know, started to steal my belongings, throw them over a fence. I've been to several of their protests. I've never laid hands on anyone. Yeah, as you can see in the video, there's evidence that, you know, they stole my megaphone. So they were the first ones to engage. And I reacted and retrieved my property. And after that incident, things got heated and escalated. And that's when JSO had stepped in. And I could guarantee you one thing right now. If the five or six protesters had listened to police orders and complied, they would have not have been arrested. And I find it insulting that they're going to try to use the, you know, stereotypical Democratic ploy of making this into a social justice issue. Connell Crooms is a young African-American handicapped male who was brutally beaten by JSO. This is the same man who is standing up on that stage, you know, yelling obscenities, telling F the police. And I've seen him at multiple rallies calling for a revolution in the streets. And
okay. And Gary, stand by 1 second. We only have one person here in the studio who was also there with you. Karen Morian, sure. Your response to his point of view.
Well, first of all, it's my understanding from our research that disrupting a lawful assembly is a second degree misdemeanor. John, you can correct me on that. And so Gary knows he's been disrupting demonstrations for months now, or at least trying to. I have to agree with them about the compliance with the police. However, there were other incidents. There is video footage of Gary shoving Connell, whose arms are out wide and non-threatening. There's video of Gary shoving a police officer, and yet there are stills of him leaning on a police car after the incident, and he's not under arrest. So if there was a fight, then both sides of the people should be arrested. But what we felt standing up there was we felt swarmed by police officers. And there were some kind of private security people there in almost identical uniforms, and it was very difficult to tell who was who.
Okay, and Gary, we're getting lots of tweets about you from listeners. Here's one. And Gary told me directly that his purpose is to come out and troll events critical of Donald Trump. Was that your purpose?
You know, after the election of Donald Trump, we've seen this movement, this indivisible movement, this movement by radical left-wing progressives who, you know.
Why do you call them radical? Why do you call them radical?
Because this isn't your stereotypical classical liberal movement. You know, during the Tea Party movement, there, I can guarantee you that there was, you know, zero to no arrests. And if you look at the inauguration, it was called Disrupt J20. And there was over 100 people that were arrested with felony arrests at the inauguration. So this new movement after this election of Donald Trump is not your stereotypical liberal movement. This is a new form which they've chosen to use violence.
Okay, and I get your point, Gary. But Gary and Wells, whoa, everybody, hold on 1 second. I'm going to put you on hold, Gary, because I need to get a few more people on the air that are waiting on hold to talk. Stand by 1 second. And Wells, John Phillips, stand by. Here's a quick email from Bill in Springfield. I dislike Gary Snow and what he stands for. However, the video clearly shows the masked anti-war protester initiates the first contact by grabbing Snow's megaphone. Snow purposely acts as an agitator to provoke the public, but that doesn't excuse the inappropriate and illegal behavior by some of the protesters. All right, let's go to a few more of your calls, and then we'll get back to Wells Todd and John Phillips. Maria at the Beaches, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, so my question is actually for JSO, because I was at a Donald Trump rally in which there were hundreds of people in attendance between the supporters of the Donald Trump rally and the protesters. JSO was able to effectively de-escalate any confrontations that happened in between these two crowds where the emotions were highly volatile. I was a personal witness to this. So my question to JSO is, why were you able to control and de-escalate the situation with hundreds of more people involved and way more escalated confrontations happening, but you allowed a 50-person rally in Henning Park to devolve into such violence, number one? And number two, why did you allow Gary Snow to sit there and film and be way too close to the arrest when you shoved, pushed, and punched all the other protesters that were there that were trying to inform you, A, that Connell is deaf and to stop beating on him, and two, that the 74-year-old man that you punched six times in the face and choked is a veteran and to please stop?
Okay.
That's my question.
Thank you. And John Phillips, as the attorney here, will be representing some of the people arrested and detained. What about that question?
It's questions that we have, too, for JSO. And for Mr. Snow, you know, I would have two questions, too. Number one, is it Mr. Nix or Mr. Snow? Because I like to address people by proper name. And second, does he recognize the counter points right to assemble under the First Amendment? It seems like he takes exception to that over and over again. He has rights to hold his own event. They have a right to hold their event. And it's the disruption of the First Amendment and the kind of the provocateur, as he's been called, that's causing problems over and over again in the city.
Wells Todd.
Yes, he insinuates himself into these rallies and marches. He runs up to the front of them with his huge Donald Trump sign and flag. He puts his finger in people's faces. As a matter of fact, he put his finger, his middle finger, up and actually put it and touched Cornell's nose with it. This is a man who's known by hundreds of people here in Jacksonville, and they will come forward to testify that he is a provocateur. He is talking very nicely now, but he knows what he did in Chicago.
Which is what?
Threatened somebody with a gun. He threatened somebody with a gun.
And how? Tell me what you know about that.
Well, I know it. If you go on Facebook, there's a lot of information about this guy on Facebook, okay? There are two African Americans following him, and he's being guarded by police.
And as we learn more about his role in allegedly going in and disrupting events, what about the counter argument that even if he did disrupt and provoke, that there might still have been improper behavior by some of the protesters? What would you say to that argument?
Well, I want to say two things that JPC is doing, and obviously. Recently doing more nonviolence trainings and peacekeeper trainings. Since so many groups have been harassed, they've reached out to us and asked for help in training. Obviously, we haven't trained everybody yet. I have to say, I saw an awful lot of terrified young people who were being traumatized by this swarm of police that came into the crowd. They saw their friends being thrown to the ground, and they lost it. They freaked out and they got scared. And it's a completely human emotion that I don't blame them for. And I'm hoping that we can prevent this from happening again. If you would remind me your question, though, I will answer it.
And we'll keep talking about whether or not the courts will decide that the protesters acted properly or not. And by the way, just an absolute blizzard of tweets about this topic, about the Hemming Park Five, as they're being called. Here are just a few of them. More than 60% of Americans disapprove of President Trump. That doesn't make us radical. Here is another tweet. Look at Snow's Facebook page. His purpose is to incite confrontation. A tweet from Katie. I've been to a peaceful meeting at a library, interrupted in a hostile way by Gary Snow. Lots of calls. Let's go to Dustin in Springfield. Go ahead, Dustin.
Hi. Yes, I was one of the organizers of the protest. I'm actually Dave Schneider's roommate. I was present. I was, you know, just feet away as all this was happening. And I wanted to call in and give my account and just say that Gary Snow absolutely physically started the aggression first. He actually shoulder charged me first. You know, he was allowed into our protest. This is a person that's a purported Klansman. And I've been organizing for almost 10 years. So is Dave. We've organized hundreds and hundreds of peaceful protests. Never seen anything like this. Standard procedure, cops separate protesters and counter-protesters, especially when you have purported Klansmen and, you know, black activists and progressive activists. I've never seen anything like this, letting a Klansman into the protest, harassing people. He tried to get up to the stage. You know, we tried to create a physical barrier without touching him to keep space separated. He ran around the back. I tried to position myself on the stage between the speakers and Snow. He rammed me with his shoulder, and he was carrying this giant flag. I mean, this flagpole, it was like a thick wooden flag, like a weapon, like this Trump-Pence flag. So he gets on the stage. He's swinging it around. He's hitting, you know, speakers on the stage with his flagpole and the flag. And then if you watch the video, it's very clear. I was there. Snow jumps down. He goes after one of the people. Connell is between him and the other guy, his hands outstretched. Gary Snow hits him and physically assaults him. Then Gary Snow goes after another person, and okay. Connell tries to put himself.
We get the idea, Dustin. Thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off. We're just getting a little tight on time. I want to take one more call. Emily on the South Side. Go ahead, Emily.
Okay. What I haven't heard since this happened. These poor people that hit with this horrible chemical weapons bomb, and then we bombed them again. I don't understand. I haven't heard a word about if they're getting any help. If any help is out there for these people, I haven't heard a word from any news media.
Yeah, thank you for that. And let's talk about that quickly before we wrap this up. The whole purpose of this event, this protest, was to express opposition to military strikes in Syria.
Well, I have to say most of the crowd were young people, and I think there's a real fear among their generation that this will turn into their Vietnam, their Iraq war that just goes on and on and on, because it's already been, the war in Syria has already gone on longer than World War II. And so I think they're very concerned that we're going to get dragged into an endless war in Syria, and they wanted to try and say no before it gets that far along.
Can I make one comment? It's very evident what President Trump is doing. He says one thing about being, he's crying crocodile tears over these kids who are dying in Syria, okay? But he will not allow them to enter the United States. He's a hypocrite. And this has to be stopped. And we will not stop our demonstrations, okay, our protest. And I'm willing to travel. I'm willing to travel to different places in this country to speak out against what happened here.
Okay. And Gary Snow, still with us. Gary Snow, a few minutes ago, someone accused you of white nationalists and sentiments and being affiliated with the Klan. Are you?
Right. No. This is your stereotypical, false, unsubstantiated allegations in order to, vilify somebody and their character. If, we've seen Hillary Clinton, the campaign did this to Donald Trump. They did it to all of Donald Trump supporters.
Why do you have someone burning the red, black, and green flag on your Facebook site? Who has a mask over his face, and then he pulls out a pistol and shoots the flag.
They don't allow you to see because I actually stand up to racism. Racism comes in any form and any color. We have a new movement in America called black supremacy and black nationalists. So I find it odd if I am a white man who stands up against black
Same old story.
Okay, guys. See, and you know what? Gary, thank you. Wells Todd, thank you. Karen Morian, thank you. John Phillips, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to end with this last question. The legal process, what's the next step?
We start today, and we're going to investigate. We don't do just an over-the-weekend investigation and say, this crime was violated or not. We're going to investigate all the parties. I hope the parties that were touched or assaulted by Mr. Snow file charges against Mr. Snow. We need everybody at the table to be held accountable, and we're going to defend our clients to every constitutional right they have.
We really appreciate you all being here this morning. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Culpepper with all your sports news and notes, including the first place Jacksonville Armada. But up next, we remember the fallen from Vietnam as the wall that heals visits Jacksonville. Stay with us.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The Hearing Center's audiologists at Jacksonville Hearing and Balance Institute offer guidance to the right hearing aid the first time. Hearing loss can affect your quality of life. Located by Town Center, for more information, betterhearingjax.com.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, after America's first direct attack against the Assad regime since Syria's civil war began, what's next?
You've got Hezbollah, you've got Iran, you've got obviously the Syrian forces, you've got the Russians, you've got multiple rebel groups, and then you have ISIS, of course.
We'll answer your questions about Syria next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Florida played a major role in the success of Elvis Presley. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Bob Keeling about his latest book, Elvis Ignited, The Rise of an Icon in Florida. We'll discuss an 18th century trading company that did business with Native Americans in Florida and talk about new research on Zora Neale Hurston. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, it's called The Wall That Heals, a half-scale replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall that bears the names of the more than 3 million Americans who served in Vietnam and the more than 58,000 who made the ultimate sacrifice in that war. The Wall That Heals has traveled to visit cities all across the country. Now it's coming to downtown Jacksonville. WJCT Public Broadcasting and the City of Jacksonville's Military Affairs and Veterans Department invite you to join us later this week in honoring our local Vietnam veterans as the wall is displayed in downtown Metropolitan Park. Here with a preview, we welcome the City of Jacksonville's Bill Spann. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Also with us, WJCT board member Dan Bean of the firm Holland & Knight.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And Vietnam veteran Bob Adelhelm. He is with Vietnam Vets 1046 and the local group Vets for Vets. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Bill Spann, let's begin with you. The city and WJCT bringing the Wall That Heals to town. This is really exciting. It's a way for people to come out and pay tribute to our local Vietnam veterans. What's going to be happening?
Well, we're going to have some great volunteers out there helping, and I'd like to publicly thank JCT for really stepping up. I mean, you say it's WJCT and the Military Affairs Department, is really mostly, it's like the mouse and the elephant.
Oh, okay.
We're walking across the bridge and I'm the mouse looking up at you going, we're shaking this bridge. So thanks a lot to WJCT for helping us honor Vietnam vets. It's a great honor to be part of the team.
Right. And Dan Bean, this is exciting for WJCT to be part of this. It's a mobile replica of the actual Vietnam Memorial in Washington. And it's mobile. It travels all over.
Yes, incredibly moving. 58,000 names, 250 feet long, open 24/7 while it's here. You know, just another way to recognize the Vietnam veterans in our city, in our county, and to bring attention to them that they so badly deserve.
And this is going to be displayed Thursday morning at Metropolitan Park. Bob Adelhelm with Vietnam Vets 1046 and Vets for Vets. What are your hopes for the Wall That Heals in terms of raising awareness about, you know, the ongoing issues that Vietnam veterans have been dealing with for decades now?
Yeah, well, it's important for the Vietnam vets to get the recognition that they didn't get when they came back, especially those who fought in country. I'm not an in-country vet. I served aboard ship during 75 when Vietnam fell. And I remember seeing the tears in the eyes of some of the hardened veterans that served there. So it's important for them to be recognized. But the other thing that's important is the wall for the Vietnam veterans is more about faces than it is about names on a wall. They remember the faces of those that they left behind. So that's what's important. But we hope that the community comes out and shows their respect for those who were on the wall.
And the Wall of Faces, tell me a little bit about that, Bill Spann. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, they want to find a face, is that right, to go with each name of all the 58,000? How important is that?
Well, they're doing that. Let me interject. What I meant by the faces on the wall, you know, the names on the wall that's coming here, that movable wall, to a Vietnam vet, when you look at the name, it equates to a face.
Sure.
But the Vietnam Veterans Organization is looking at putting together a wall in Florida that actually has the faces, the pictures of veterans who were killed in Vietnam. And they're working on now. I think they're short about 150 or so pictures to complete that. But that's a project that they've undertaken.
And that is a component of the attraction that's coming this week. There'll also not only the names on the wall, but there'll also be a video and faces as well. You know, there are many faces, unfortunately, that do not have a photo of the loved one, and those are the wall that heals is attempting to ratify that issue. If you have a loved one that you have a photo of that there is no photo of at the display, we would love to have that. And
sure.
There's information there at vvmf.org. If you can help us fill that void, that would be great.
Yeah, vvmf.org. You know, Bill Spann, my dad served in Vietnam. I was lucky. He was one of the guys who came home in one piece. Here in Jacksonville, this is such an important issue with our large veterans community, and you with the city are really the liaison to try to help work with the veterans community. This is an important piece of that, it seems.
And it's one of the messages I work to get out to the community, that you can come down if you're a veteran, no matter which conflict you served in, as long as you have a DD-214 that shows honorable service. You can come down to City Hall at no cost with no appointment, Monday through Friday, and we will help you get your VA claim started. We'll do letters of appeal. We'll represent you very much like a CPA welcomes, helps you with the IRS. And you talk about your father. He may have come back in one piece, but a lot of our vets don't. They may come back physically well, but mentally they're suffering from many of the anxiety conditions that we now refer to as PTSD.
Sure.
The city over the last 2 years has helped over 14,500 vets receive more than $51 million in new money from the VA. About 18.6% of those, or about 2,600, were for one of the seven anxiety conditions that the VA recognizes as part of PTSD. So we're very, very aggressively pursuing helping vets with PTSD.
And it's such an honor for Jacksonville to host The Wall That Heals. Dan, WJCT is inviting the whole community, really, to come out this Thursday, correct?
Correct. Thursday at 9 o'clock, there'll be the opening ceremony, but then also the whole weekend, it'll be open 24/7. We do have a need for some watchstanders. For some of you that have served in the military, you're familiar with this. And so I'm looking forward to a mid-watch myself. But we do have a few open slots, and if you would honor us by filling some slots, there's going to be some folks that come out at odd hours because they suffer from things that they just don't want to be in a crowd, and they would rather to have that time by themselves. They'll be out there, I'm sure, at 2 or 3 in the morning, and if you can help them find their loved ones on the wall, that would be great. But you can volunteer at put your name on the watch standing list at wjct.org/thewallthatheals, and we would ask that you take some time and to do that as well.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, thank you all so much for joining us. Three veterans here in the studio, Bill Spann with the City of Jacksonville, our own board chair, Dan Bean, and local veteran Bob Adelhelm. Guys, thanks a lot. And again, The Wall That Heals, Thursday morning, 9 a.m. in downtown Metropolitan Park as it visits Jacksonville. Thanks so much. And we'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, how healthcare became big business. We'll talk to Elizabeth Rosenthal, author of An American Sickness, about how the pricing and billing of medical services, devices, and prescription drugs became so complicated, even some doctors don't understand it. She's the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Before becoming a journalist, she was a physician. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
WJCT Public Broadcasting, the City of Jacksonville's Military Affairs and Veterans Department, invites you to The Wall That Heals, which honors Vietnam veterans, April 13th through 16th at Metropolitan Park. The wall can be visited 24 hours a day, open and free to the public. To find out how you can volunteer or submit your pictures, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, Parkinson's disease afflicts millions of people worldwide, but it's also one of the most misunderstood diseases. The First Coast Parkinson's 5K team is partnering with UF Health Jacksonville's Neuroscience Institute to bring awareness, funding, and support to research into Parkinson's. It's happening soon with the First Coast Parkinson's Run, the fourth annual event, as April marks Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month. Here with more, we welcome race creator Jennifer Otero. Good to see you.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Odunachi Ogu, neurologist at UF Health Jacksonville.
Thank you.
And Bill Wilson, he's the hero of the year for this Parkinson's Awareness Group. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Oh, in a moment, we'll talk about the big event. But first, Dr. Ogu, tell us a little bit more about UF Health Jacksonville's Neuroscience Institute and your research into Parkinson's.
So the Neuroscience Institute has been has had Parkinson's in mind for over 20 years. We've been one of the first centers of Parkinson's centers in Jacksonville. We have had a whole range of research, clinical trials into looking at, number one, the neuroprogression in Parkinson's, looking at medications for advancing Parkinson's disease. So we've certainly been in one of the forefronts of research in Parkinson's disease.
And Jennifer Otero, you have a personal connection to Parkinson's disease. Is that what sparked you to create the run to raise awareness?
Yes, that is correct. My mother had Parkinson's, and actually Dr. Ogu was her doctor before she passed.
Uh-huh. And so with the fourth year now and more than 700 registered runners and walkers, tell us a little bit about this big event.
All right. Well, it's more than just a run. You know, we have the 5K and the 1 mile, but this is about togetherness. We have, you know, bounce houses and DJs, and we have over 40 booths, vendors, and team tents, and we have two teams with over 50 people each one. So it's more of a all-day event all the way up till about noon. You're right, there's about 700 to 800 registrants and about 1,200 people in attendance. It's a lot of fun.
Bill Wilson, you have been dubbed the hero of the year when it comes to this big event in Parkinson's Awareness Month. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 11 years ago. And like most Parkinson sufferers, I didn't really want to accept it. So it was a couple of years before we started looking at things. And then I noticed that Jacksonville was not doing anything in terms of awareness for Parkinson. So my wife and I took it on to start a newsletter. And 3 years ago, we put on a roundtable presentation that was very successful. And I've been tried to stay as active as I could in the Parkinson awareness particularly.
Sure. Dr. Ogu, staying active for patients and seeking treatment, what advice do you have for patients and loved ones that are dealing with Parkinson's disease?
I think education is the key. Without education, I think we can't understand the disease properly. So that's key. And secondly, in addition to medication treatment, I'm a great believer in exercise and keeping active. So whatever medication, whatever stage you are with Parkinson's, you have to keep active. You have to exercise. And with Parkinson's awareness, I think you get certainly a good spectrum of information to help caregivers and patients who have Parkinson's disease.
And they can stay active at the run. It's coming up Saturday, April 22nd. Not too late to register.
That's right. Registration is still ongoing. And it's a great way to contribute to the Parkinson's community. All local support for Parkinson's patients, caretakers, research. That's what the First Coast Parkinson's Run helps to fund.
It's coming up, the fourth annual First Coast Parkinson's Run, Saturday, April 22nd at Riverside Park on Park Street in Jacksonville. Go to firstcoastparkinsonsrun.com. Dr. Odonachi Ogu with U of Health, race creator Jennifer Otero, and Hero of the Year, Bill Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, the high status of hip-hop. The halls of academia are not just for teaching the classics anymore. A new generation of scholars is bringing academic rigor to a uniquely American art form. How does hip-hop balance this newfound respect with keeping its street cred? Next time on 1A, weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
From jazz to indie music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, the Armada find themselves in first place after starting the season with back-to-back shutouts.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper's here now with more about the Armada's winning ways and the rest of the weekend sports news and notes. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, it's just two matches into the 2017 season, but the Armada find themselves atop the table in the North American Soccer League, so it's a good step after what has been a bit of a tumultuous offseason. The Armada have won both games in the young season by identical 1-0 scores over the same team, FC Edmonton. The first one was at home. Saturday's win came in Canada when Zach Steinberger scored in the 7th minute and the goal held up. In the two games against FC Edmonton, a playoff team a year ago, the Armada have surrendered only 3 shots on goal, so the defense has been terrific. And while Edmonton did create some chances in the second half on Saturday, the Armada able to hold them away. And when you win away in soccer, it's huge. You know, a draw away is usually considered a good result, but a win away, even better. Jacksonville now stands alone atop the standings for the first time since the days after their inaugural match back in 2015 when they beat FC Edmonton to start the season. They'll host the expansion San Francisco Deltas Saturday at Hodges Stadium at UNF as they try to remain undefeated on the season.
Go Armada. Pretty exciting. Let's talk about the Masters, too. A lot of interest in that over the weekend.
Terrific tournament, as it almost always is. And it went to a playoff where Sergio Garcia won his first major, beating Englishman Justin Rose for the green jacket. A couple of thoughts here. It's the first major championship for Garcia after 73 tries. He had been had the tag of best golfer never to win a major. That one seems to bounce around, and it's not really the title that you want to have. He has now shed that title. He did win the Players' Championship, you might recall, in 2008, also in a playoff, incidentally. Sergio had lost 4 times in playoffs in big tournaments, twice at the Tour Championship, at the 2015 Players, and then at the British Open in 2007. So we finally got off the schneid there. Mm-hmm. He becomes the 3rd Spaniard to win the Masters, joining Jose Maria Olazabal and Seve Ballesteros,
I'm glad you had to say those names, not me.
These are well-known golfers in golf community, and both Spaniards. And it was just so happened that yesterday would have been Seve Ballesteros' 60th birthday if he were still alive, one of Sergio's idols. So great there. A couple other feel-good thoughts from the Masters. Matt Kuchar, who lives just up the Georgia coast here, made a hole-in-one on the 16th hole, then promptly signed the ball and gave it to a young patron sitting near the green. And the look on the face of the youngster was just priceless.
That's
what
sweet.
He has done. Kuchar finish in a tie for fourth, his second best finish ever at Augusta. And the sportsmanship shown between Garcia and Rose was just terrific, each applauding the other's great shots. And then after the playoff hole, even as Rose had disappointment welling up, he embraced his friend and the Ryder Cup teammate. Rose's wife gave Garcia's fiance and mother a celebratory group hug. Just a lot of love out there on the course at Augusta National
nice
yesterday.
Nice to see that. And we're a little short on time. The Sharks had a win over the High Country Grizzlies Sunday. And lots of excitement. The home opener for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp is Wednesday. Cole says they've whittled down the finalists for a mascot name.
Yeah, they have six names: Jimbo, Mayport, Rocky, Scampi, and Shelly. I guess that's five. My suggestion to name the shrimp Oxymoron did not make the cut.
Why not? That's brilliant.
I know. I think so, too.
Oh, let me see here. What am I going to vote for? I think I'm going to go with, I think I like Jimbo.
Jimbo the Jumbo Shrimp.
Yeah, I kind of like that. But Oxymoron would have been even better. Follow Cole on Twitter. Oh, and by the way, Cole says Tim Tebow hit a home run yesterday for the Columbia Fireflies.
Second time he's hit a home run in his first minor league season. Three hits in 13 at bats. Two of them have left the yard.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. And the show theme is composed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.